On our first minisode, we are going to talk about how to pick a happy puppy. So this is quite an in-depth episode. I think what you'll learn about the three of us is that we can really talk. But hopefully, if you're looking for a puppy, or you're advising someone on picking a puppy, or it's just something that you're thinking about in the future, we have gone into every different element that we can possibly think of to make sure that you get the right dog for your household and for your family. So on our first episode of this mini series, all about having a happy puppy, we are going to deep dive into picking a puppy from a litter, because this really is one of the most important elements of the journey, isn't it? It's getting the right dog for your family so that you're at least trying to set off on the right foot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. First kind of 8 weeks of your puppy's life is just as important, in fact, probably even more important than the life you then give it. Those early development days and that early socialization is going to really carve the path to your puppy being the right fit for your family. It's really important.
I think that is a really important element to consider, is that when you pick your puppy up, that isn't day one of their life, and that everything that happened before and everything that happened in the womb as well can have a huge impact on the development that is going to happen when you do get them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's it. They're not, you know, I think sometimes what we think about is the learning we're seeing in terms of what we are teaching them.
Yes.
Not only that, they are like sponges, just like babies are when they're younger. They're, especially with puppies, they're leading by scent. So the smells and the changes that are happening around us that we won't necessarily notice are happening from, again, when they're in the womb. And you've got the sounds, the sights, the new people, the new environments, new objects, all of these things that are changing constantly. And that's before they've even got to us.
Yeah, exactly. And the breeder has such an influence over whether that is done well, okay, or actually quite poorly. And it doesn't have to be that they come from a puppy farm for them to have slightly impoverished environment that is going to affect how they perceive the world moving forwards.
Totally. Those genes are passed down. If you've got a nervy mum, you're most likely going to have puppies that are more likely to be nervous. So yeah, it's in the DNA as well. It's not as simple as that dog will do.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Okay, so before you've even got to the breeder, before we've even picked up the phone, most people have an idea of what breed of dog they would like, or that they think that they would like. And it isn't what people think. You don't just want to go on what the dog looks like, but it's thinking about what were they bred to do. So I have Spaniels and Pointers because I like that crazy lifestyle, but it definitely doesn't fit with everyone. And often people get crossbreeds, cockapoos, who've got quite a heavy amount of Spaniel in them, and they don't realise quite how crazy a Spaniel can be. So it's not necessarily just looking at the cuteness of a breed, but also maybe what went into that breed going back throughout the decades and decades of breeding.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of reasons why people choose different breeds. And I think one might be popularity of the breed at the time, of, you know, what people see around them on the streets. A lot of people that we meet have had a dog like that before,
yeah,
or their friends have got a dog and that dog's all right. So it must mean that all of the breed are the same.
Yes.
Or again, what they see on Instagram.
Yeah.
Fluffy puppies are always the cutest to pick as well. So,
or just what they've had forever. You know, we have some clients come through that are now into their 80s getting Labrador puppies again.
Yeah.
Maybe not as appropriate anymore, you know, if you've got a big boisterous Labrador pulling them down the street, it's just not the right time to have that kind of dog. Yeah. So,
and they might have forgotten how hard it was to have a puppy 20 years ago when they had one. So
that's a big part of it, isn't it? That if you've had a dog from puppy and they've lived to a really good age of kind of 14, 15 years, and then they pass away, and then a year or two later you get another puppy. Like you say, you're up to nearly 20 years since you went through that puppy phase and that adolescent phase with them. I also think with like Labradors, there are a huge spectrum of behaviors that you can get from a Labrador to like a really sedate, been here before, knows everything, needs nothing, right through to almost clinically insane.
Sometimes it's just like huge spaniel Labradors.
You know, really strong working drive, doesn't really want to sit still, very busy, into everything, very greedy, and you can get anything and everything in between. And sometimes that is luck of the draw rather than anything else that you can grab hold of. So you have to be prepared for anything within that range, even within something that you would think is quite solid, like a Labrador.
Yeah, sure.
I think being realistic about the breed choice as well. I think sometimes if you've got it in your head, you know, for instance, I really want a husky. I mean, a lot of the time people buy huskies because of how they look.
Yes.
And I think sometimes you might do a bit of research, and that's awesome. And you're reading things like, yeah, that'll be fine. But I think being realistic about actually your lifestyle and making sure that the dog that you bring into your home is appropriate for that lifestyle, and not trying to fit a square, no, is it a round hole? A round
square
dog?
Peg, round
square
hole.
Into a round hole. We get there in the end.
Something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not trying to shoehorn this dog that just will not fit into your family. And then and then that's when we end up with issues down the line, because we're getting that our dog that we saw these lovely adventures actually just isn't the right fit, and that's not fair on anyone.
No. Yeah. Does the dog fit into your family, but also can you provide a life that that dog would need as well? So both ends of it, like, are you a match effectively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I was just gonna say, like, Tinder for dogs.
Tinder.
So we love spaniels, but we got a pointer because John, my husband, wanted to run with a dog, and so we wanted a dog that could really like be pushed, because he does silly crazy runs, you know, and a spaniel would do that, but a pointer was a slightly better fit for it, you know, slightly would go a little bit further. When John works away and I'm here on my own with Stanley, it's quite challenging because his requirements are, he needs a lot of it. We have created an athlete out of him. So, you know, I do have to make sure that my day allows for lots of time for him. Yeah. But that's okay. I signed up for that. I knew that that's what was coming. And it wasn't a shock, but some days it's exhausting. And I will always say that, because that's truthful. Would I, if I had my own like choice, would I have something that was a little bit easier, that maybe needed a little bit less exercise? Yeah, maybe, because when I'm on my own it is hard. So thinking about your lifestyle across an entire year as well, not just, oh, in the summer it's lovely, we can go for long walks, but like in the winter those long walks are really, really boring and hard work, because you're out in the rain and the mud.
And also you've got a golden retriever who likes to roll in it.
Those spongy poodle breeds as well.
And can you afford the level of coats that they need, and you know, and are you prepared? Like, I'm not prepared. I'm not someone who enjoys grooming dogs. I do what needs to be done, but grooming is not a love of mine. So I don't want a dog that needs a lot of grooming. My neighbour has a bearded collie, and she spends half her life brushing that dog.
She probably enjoys
He was a show dog, you know, that's what they wanted to do. They have the table and the setup and everything, but she went into that knowing that half her life would be brushing that dog.
And finances are important as well, the bigger the dog, the more your money you're going to have to spend on them. So that's also something to note that people don't always think about, like food itself. Buying food for a large dog is expensive.
I met a mastiff at Crufts last year, and he ate like kilos of food every day, you know, a kilo of tripe and a kilo of this and a kilo of that every single day, and he was in great condition, but that was probably higher than my own personal food bill. So
His mum and dad were on beans on toast every day, but
toast, no beans.
No, not random.
But just thinking about, you know, they're going to need grooming. It's like a cockapoo is every kind of 6 to 8 weeks they need a full groom, and they're expensive. Food, exercise, and how much space are they going to take up in your house? If you have a one bedroom flat, is a Great Dane going to be appropriate in that space? You know, thinking of things like that. across everything. What are you going to do when you go on holiday? Where are they going to go? You know, do you have friends, family, or a professional that's going to help with that?
Yeah. So if you've been through all of that and you're like, I'm still
Okay.
committed.
I'm still, we haven't put you off yet.
Yeah. And hopefully we haven't. It's just
No.
things to consider.
Yeah.
Then I found a really fantastic way to find an appropriate fit if we were really
Okay.
gone out the window. Is and you know, Louise Glazebrook, I think this is in her book or this is a variation of it, which is a fantastic book. There's two things that you can do, one of which is write down and really decide what is a good dog to you, because a good dog in the end can mean different things to different people. So some people be like, well, a good dog to me is a dog that doesn't jump on me when I come home, will walk on the lead nicely, and doesn't beg for food, for instance. And the other partner in the house might be like, oh, well, I thought it was that they came back to their name and they, you know, they people have different versions of what a good dog looks like. So I think within the household, just decide what a good dog looks like to you. And then separately, write down your wish list of the things that are most
Okay.
important. Are they good with, generally good with like children? Are they sociable? Are they guardians that you want? Is it, do you want a dog that's really playful? Do you want a dog that you don't have to groom? Do you want a dog that doesn't molt? You know, and you can write down in a priority order what your top, I don't know, 10 things are.
Yeah.
And then on a list at the bottom, definitely don't want
Okay.
these attributes in a dog. And then you can compare notes, because then you can see, well, okay, we're on completely different pages here of what we want in a dog. And then you can find common grounds of the things that, in terms of breed traits, that are the most likely to work for your family. Do you want a dog that can just sit on the sofa or go for a 10-mile run every day, you know?
Yeah.
And then that can inform your breed research. So start there. What do I want out of a dog? And then research what breeds actually offer those things that it is that you want that fits into your family.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And you might get a breed that you'd never heard of or not thought of before that just fits in perfectly. I was doing this with a friend of mine. He wants to get a new dog. And I was like, an Italian Greyhound would be a really good fit for you. And it's not something he'd come across before. And he was like, oh, yeah, because he was talking about Whippets. And I was like, oh, Italian Greyhound might be fun as well. So you can kind of pull out these breeds that aren't going to be in the top 10 best family dogs or, you know,
Yeah.
those kind of like polls on the internet.
Yeah, and also using that method as well. I think something that we all, especially as ladies, we all get waylaid with is when we go to see those puppies, all the endorphins kick in and we
Yeah.
just kind of get blinded a bit by the cuteness of the puppy in front. And then you don't want to leave them or you kind of
Yeah.
want one. But if you have that list already clear in front of you, you've got something to protect you against just going with your endorphins,
Yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, okay. So let's say we have picked our breed.
Yeah.
Where are we going to find this dog? Where are we going to find this perfect puppy that we have in our mind's eye of, you know, that's going to come back, going to listen, going to not jump up, doesn't molt, doesn't smell, eats only a
In
small amount, doesn't need grooming, sleeps on the sofa, but
the
also goes for long walks? Where are we going
dark,
to
in
find them?
a
Oh no.
cattery.
I'm not a cat person. Well, I like cats, but I'm not a cat person.
No. Okay. So,
Because there are a lot of places online that you can Google Labrador puppies or French
great.
Bulldog puppies or Dachshunds or Cockapoos, whatever it is that you've decided is the right breed for you. Some are more reputable than others.
Yes, for sure. Yep.
I think this is a minefield. Even as a professional in the industry, it terrifies me because they are very clever at advertising their puppies, and they're getting more advanced in the way that a poorly bred puppy can be made to look as a well-bred puppy. So I just think it's really tough. And this is where, like you're saying, when you endorphins kick in, you've probably got a bit of a hit of oxytocin as well, is that you do have to go in with kind of steely resolution that you're only going to walk away if it's, you know, with the puppy, if it's 100%
Yeah, I
the
think
right puppy.
taking somebody with you is helpful for that as well, so you're not on your own and
Yeah.
if you do want to say no, walk away, or it's a space that doesn't feel right, it's easier to do that with somebody else there than if you're on your own as well. But
Yeah.
in terms of places for you to look, Again, I find it really controversial as well because, you know, we've spoken about Pets for Homes before or, you know, online places like that. I think that a good quality breeder wouldn't make it so ridiculously easy for somebody to get a puppy. And
Yes.
usually I would recommend that people go through recommendations from people that they know, or people that they know, you know, a friend of a friend, where
Yes.
there's some kind of guarantee that those people are real life breeders and not
Yeah.
trying to make money wrongly.
Yeah. One thing that I was, it's just come back into my mind. One thing that I was going to say about when you're thinking about a breed, let's say you've decided that, a Wheaton Terrier is the breed for you. Not the most common. You maybe haven't come across that many in your life, but that's come up. Is using a service like Borrow My Doggy and borrowing, looking after somebody else's Wheaton Terrier. And then if you really like that dog and it does fit into your lifestyle, then ask them where they got it from. And then they, because often that those can be a great way to understand a bit more about the breed and find out where they got their dog from. You can then contact that breeder, and if they don't have a litter, then they're generally in a network of breeders who, and they'll say, oh, I don't have any, but so and so's due a litter in June. And that can be a great way to start the conversation as well.
That's a great idea with the Borrow My Doggy.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be going for a random breed. Not that Wheaton Terrier is a particular random, it was just the most like out there, like a dog you might not know particularly well that I could think of. But even if you wanted a Labrador or a Golden Retriever, like how much do they shed? A lot. How covered in dog hair are you going to be? A lot. And are you okay with that? That's the
Yeah,
truth.
totally.
So I think like so Pets for Homes can be controversial because it is a huge marketplace where people can list dogs, and there aren't really any checks and balances, as far as I'm aware, as to the quality of the breeder, their knowledge and understanding of breeding and nurturing puppies. But you can still reach out to people on there, and then you can use the conversations that you have with them to further give more, well, to give more knowledge on whether you want to go further or not, can't you?
And I think the other side of that is that people don't really know what they're looking for. So they don't know what to ask. They don't know what those breeders should have. So this is something that we'll, obviously talk about throughout the podcast today, in that, if you're going, okay, I want a Labrador puppy, but I don't know anyone with a Labrador puppy and I haven't found one on, on Borrow My Doggy, where do I go first? Like, what's a reputable site that I can start at? You can start. The Kennel Club might have some in there. It's still questionable, but it's probably better than Kev 10 streets down that might live there and might not.
Yeah,
But
totally. Totally.
I
I
might
think
live there, might not.
we're recording this off the back of the Crufts weekend when there's
I
been a lot
know.
of controversy
There's a lot
about
of controversy.
breeding.
Yeah, there is. But again, it's all recommendations. For me, it's recommendations, the best you can do. And the reasons why. I think the why is important as well, is why is it important for you to find a reputable breeder? Why is it important? Why are they better people to go to rather than someone who is just breeding a family dog? And I guess the reason for that is most of the time, good breeders are doing it because they want to create better health and a better line of dogs for that breed. And as an owner of a puppy who has taken on one that maybe isn't from a good line of dogs, you have probably got quite an expensive future ahead of you, health. So I do think it's worth taking time saying no to breeders or puppies that you go to see that don't have that lineage, and saving yourself some money and stress and upset in the
Yeah. So the thing, first thing I would do if I was going for a Labrador, I'm going to use a Labrador because they do have health issues, is
future.
I would research what tests should the parents have had and what scores am I looking for? Because it's all well and good saying, oh, they need a hip score. But if you don't know what the number means, you might as well not ask the question. So understanding what hip scores, elbow scores, eye scores, BOA scores, whatever it is that you need for that specific breed to help you have a healthy not expensive vet bill type dog is going to be number one. So that's what I would have. I would have it on a piece of paper, and I would be, that would be the first thing that I was asking the
Yeah, and if
breeder.
those tests haven't been done, then I would be questioning, well,
Why?
Why not?
Why not?
Would you not do those
Yeah.
tests if you're trying to bring some healthy puppies into the world? But
Exactly.
also on Pets for Home, I mean, I found my dog on Pets for Homes.
Yes. There are that's the problem I think with it, because there are excellent breeders alongside not excellent breeders, and that it's hard sometimes to tell them apart. But this is
Separate
it's going
from
deeper, isn't it, with the breeder that's
yeah,
the
for sure. And I think, because it is such a big platform, you will have reputable breeders advertising on there. If someone doesn't know, I don't know, Kingswood, I don't know if there's some actual kennels, but like Kingswood breeders or whatever, sounds something like that.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Fields, finds, whatever. But if you know that name, how are you, and if the SEO is terrible online, like how are you going to find them? So it's an advertising platform for them. So yeah, I think if you have found your puppy on there, or if you are looking on there for a puppy, then hopefully the rest of this podcast will just help you understand what to look out for red flags or green flags,
Or green flags, yeah.
with these breeders.
So my big thing is I like breeders to interrogate potential owners. If the breeder is super keen for you to take one or more puppies
Soon.
soon, especially if it's the last two, and it would be a shame to split them up, wouldn't it? I'll do you a deal. That to me is a red flag.
We should have little flags that we should wave.
Yeah, green flag, green flag. These breeders should care about where their puppy is going to go. And if that's not coming across, then
And I mean, I know distance can be a bit of an issue if you're picking a dog up from far away, but I think it's also a great green flag for me if you have to visit that puppy a couple of times before you get them. And maybe even if you are local, that they, understand what your home is like and your environment and your home life. So they won't be asking questions about you, about what you're going to provide for their puppies to make them have a good life.
That's exactly it. And it is. We got Stanley from Deepest Darkest Wales, and we went once because it was 5 hours to drive there, so it was a 10-hour round trip. So we just went the one time because that was in 8 weeks. It was really hard to find the time, but she wouldn't let us have him unless we'd gone.
But the fact that you drove for 5 or so hours to get
Exactly.
somebody is quite
Yeah.
a
Exactly. So,
good.
and I spoke to another breeder about Slovaks, and she wanted to do a video call. So, and we would have to walk around everywhere, and we had a low fence, and she said no because I had a low fence, which has never caused a problem with Stan, and I knew it wouldn't. But she was like, "That fence is too low. I wouldn't be happy." And I was like, "Okay, fine, that's fair."
Yeah, and you'd rather, in the nicest way, like you'd rather have breeders out there that are giving those vets and doing those
Absolutely.
tests,
Absolutely.
and fine, yeah, it's not the right fit for you, but it's better to have someone that cares that much.
Exactly. Okay, so we found our breeder, and we are happy that they have interrogated us, and we've gone to see the puppies, 4 or 5 weeks old maybe for the first time. What are we looking at when we have that visit with our breeder and mum? And the litter that they've had.
Essentially, you're looking for no hidden secrets. We don't want any skeletons in the closet for this breeder's house. You want mum to
You're not going
be.
to go opening
You're not.
the
Don't
cupboards,
do
though, are you? Just going to
that.
check in here.
You want transparency, don't you? You want to meet mum. You want to make sure that mum's happy and sociable with, meeting and greeting, because generally, is not happy meeting and greeting new people, or if she's having a tough time with that, then that is something to consider that might be within your puppies as well. These genes get passed down. You want to make sure the house is actually lived in. If you turn up somewhere that is a clinical show home, I would be wondering where the puppiness is in there. The reason we're saying that is because puppy farms are becoming very clever. They are renting out homes, and they are bringing people over to do their show and tell days at these homes, where, for instance, like I had a story where somebody that we know went to go and see a puppy, and he sent me a photo of the puppy in a pen, and there was one piece of newspaper down on the floor for these puppies. There was no toys, there was no vet beds, there was no nothing for them to explore or look at or chew. And I don't think that there was any water in there, you know, just, and you just look at that and you think, well, surely that's not where these puppies live. Or if they do live here, then that also is a red flag for me.
Yeah, the other end of that scale is when they're in squalor as well. And the number of people I've had get puppies because they were rescuing the puppy from a really impoverished environment, and they were like, I had to take the puppy. And I get that, because I think that would be me if I turned up in that environment. But what you have to remember when you do that is you're creating space for another puppy to be brought into that environment, and you've kind of paid for that space to become available. So as hard as it is, and I think we're going to come on to this a bit later, is if it's a really, really poor environment, is to walk away, because that puppy has not had a good first 8 weeks, and that is going to impact their brain development going forwards.
Yeah, and we'll talk a bit about what you can do if you did take a puppy out of that environment, how to support them, but also, you know, what you need to do in order to stop the further puppies being in.
Other red flags of puppy farms are often lots and lots of litters. So they might say, oh, this litter's gone, but we've got this one. Or if you're looking for a Cocker Spaniel, we've also got this Springer Spaniel litter and a Labrador litter. And we've also got some Jack Russells as well. And in this
shed
farm.
Over there. And
yeah, in this shed, we've got these, in that shed. So although puppy farmers are becoming quite nuanced, and they will have, like you say, these kind of homes that they've been brought into, and there is a mum there, not necessarily the puppy's mum, just a healthy mum that's in the environment of the same kind of breed, they will also still be in barns, because if, especially if you're looking at more of the working dogs, it's not uncommon for working dogs to come from a outdoor environment. So you do have to have your wits about you, and you do have to be really aware of what's happening.
Yeah, I think another green flag I think that people can go with is you should be welcome at any point as a prospective puppy parent. So if you're going to a breeder and you've turned up and the puppies have got tunnels and play toys and chews and licky mats and they're having the best time, and you're just like, wow, these puppies are really well looked after, the cherry on the cake is the breeder being like, if you want to come back and see your puppy again, you're more than welcome to. You just give us a ring, because for me, that is that they are always there. For one, that is actually active. And again, there's no hiding there. They're just quite happy for you to go and visit your puppy and build that relationship before you take them home.
Yeah. And I think one way to be able to identify whether they are in a kind of show home or in an actual home is, how happy are they to be handled? Because if they've not been handled, they're going to be worried about that. And if they are used to being handled, then that will come across. You'll be able to tell.
Yeah, I'd want to see mum interacting with puppies. I'd want to, you know, if mum's not there, or if mum's constantly being separated from them, I'd be a little bit worried about that.
And things like, the mum is tired, so we've just put her in a different room. You know, we don't want to stress the mum when she's with the puppies when you're there. Are all little kind of flags that I would be like, oh.
Why?
Yeah.
Other things that you can look out for that are good are Facebook groups. So if the breeders have lived this before, or if it's just a family dog and they've chosen to breed again, who's had those puppies before? Can you get their contact details? Can you talk to them? Are there WhatsApp groups that people share their puppies growing up and show videos and photos? And also where the breeder can show videos and photos of the puppies developing over their 8 weeks. Like, oh, today we went on the car ride. Today, for the first time, they got wormed. You know, all this information is stuff for me that is just like green flags.
Yeah, definitely. You know, making them have experiences outside of the whelping pen is really important. Like, even if it's just playing outside on a sunny day or a rainy day, it is really important as well. I like to know what they're being fed and how they're being fed as well. You know, kind of, what is the weaning process? I'm not a massive fan of a free-for-all when it comes to feeding puppies when they've been weaned. You can kind of get these, I don't know if they've got an official name, but they're like multi-bowl feeding stations for puppies. And I think that that adds competition over food. And personally, I would It's not a red flag, as in it's not a hard pass. It's just, I'll need to be aware of that moving forward, especially if you're taking a puppy into a multi-dog household. Are they going to be protective or competitive over resources? So you're just trying to think long term about what you're seeing and how that might impact the dog in the longer term.
Yeah, definitely.
Go on.
No, go on, it's fine.
I was just going to say as well, if you have cats, chickens, rabbits, children at home, obviously for the breeder, they're not all things that they can tick off, but are they being exposed to children in particular, especially if you have quite a busy children-centered household? Or, are there opportunities to see how that dog might interact with other animals, other species, small children, teenagers, that
Yeah,
kind of.
and that's another thing that's like both sides of the spectrum as well. Are there other dogs in the house around the puppies? Are they overbearing? Like with the children, it's great if the children are like sensible kids and they're taught, taught gentle around puppies and the puppies interacting with them, or are the kids coming in and picking them up and going, "Do you want this one? Like this?" Do you know what I mean? The handling, because I think something that a lot of puppy parents are told to focus on is really early socialization, but it's like overexposure or over socialization, and you can send your puppy the other way. So think about quality versus quantity of the socialization they're doing, especially, and later on what you will be doing with your puppy that we'll also talk about.
And the breeder might turn you away if your children are unruly around the puppies, because a really good breeder will say, if for whatever reason this puppy doesn't work out in your home, you can't take them to rescue, they must come back to me. That is a real big green flag
Big
for
flag,
me.
definitely, yeah.
And so they are hopeful that when they place their puppy in a home, that's not going to happen and they're not going to come back. And if they've seen kind of three quite wild children interacting in an inappropriate way with the puppy, that puppy's likely to come back because it's going to nip a child, it's going to make a child cry, and therefore the parents might be like, we can't cope with this, and then the puppy will be back, and then the breeder has to try and rehome a slightly older puppy who's now probably a little bit scared of children, which is a harder proposition.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
you
So
know
for the house that the puppy's actually in, like you say, like how closely does that match your environment? And I think if we just talk about, so collies, we work with a lot of collies, and a lot of the collies that we work with are farm dogs or come from a farm. So they've been brought up in a barn. They've not been brought up in a house, and it's the dog, it's that picture perfect in terms of we turn up and there's hay and there's a stable and these puppies and everything, it's something from a movie.
I can
The
see it now.
reality of that, if those puppies have not been exposed to things, or have likely not been exposed to things like vacuum cleaners and washing machines and
Children.
children and floors inside that they might slip on, or
Carpet.
carpet, or
Carpets.
just or learning how to toilet, or starting the process of learning how to toilet outside because they've never been inside. So I think there's definitely something to say in trying to match their environment with the environment you're going to offer them. If you are a farmer, or if you work out in the fields all day, that and your dog is not expected to be in a square box, a square indoor box with lots of weird noises and weird things everywhere, then that's cool. Like, yeah, good. But if you want to bring a working farm collie that's been bred and its genes are to work for 14 hours a day into a house inside where you've only got an hour for it, and it's not been in a house before,
Expect
then
problems.
yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think also as well, it's even on a smaller scale, if you were talking about toilet training as well, if you go to a flat, maybe if they're bringing up a puppy litter in a flat and they've got turf outside or the puppies are peeing, they're starting that toilet training on pebbles or pavement, and you want to transition puppy to grass to pee outside on in the garden, that's a harder transition for you to have to do as a puppy parent for toileting. And the other way around, if they're learning to go on grass and you live in a flat and you're bringing that puppy home and you don't have grass, that's also again another harder transition. So think about trying to match that. And if you can't match that, is there a way that you can then create that space at home? Are you going to be willing to make that so that the puppy can access their toilet training easier?
Definitely anything like that as well, kind of any early training that the breeder is doing is going to help you in the long run. So being aware of the substrate that they're toileting on and then being able to match that can be really helpful and will make that transition a lot easier. What else have they been doing? What have they been introduced to? And then you can pick it up and move on with it rather than either starting from scratch or changing stuff. So the puppy's like, oh, I thought I knew this and now I don't.
Yeah, and equally as well with, I mean, it's again, it's not a hard no, but with puppies where you would like them to be crate trained, perhaps because you've got kids at home, you've got other animals at home, and we've had a few breeders that have come through that, you know, give some kind of pre-training for those puppies for crates, so get them used to being isolated or on their own, and they're doing that positively. It just makes that transition into a crate space much easier when you come as well.
Definitely. And on that, just making sure that the breeder is using positive reinforcement based training techniques as standard. So all reward based, especially, you know, not that they should be doing loads of training. I'm not saying that you should be getting a puppy and they're fully house trained and can sit and walk on a lead and all of that. But anything that they have done has all been based around positive reinforcement, so that the puppy's learning that when they do stuff, good things happen to them, which is going to be really good for their brain development going forwards in the long run, isn't it? I think also just bearing in mind how many litters the mum has had is a good one. We didn't mention it earlier, but I just think it is worth reiterating that they shouldn't be having litter after litter. They shouldn't be breeding machines. They should just be having a few litters throughout the course of their entire life. And
yeah, I'd want to know mum's age. That's if you know dad's age, great. If you know much.
Yeah, because you might not get any interaction with dad. That's quite normal. That's not necessarily a red flag. Often dogs are brought in to do the deed and then not seen again.
But knowing information about him helps you learn about your puppy. So even if he's not a resident dog, if you know who the stud dog is and you know the temperament of that dog or what his lineage is, especially we've not even mentioned health of the parents as well. So, you know, I would maybe even ask to see, you know, vet history or if there's any, you know, illnesses or conditions that run through the line that you need to know about. It's all, even if you say yes to that puppy and you know that there's something in there, it's so that you can prepare yourself for something like that in the future.
Absolutely. And also, why did they pick that stud dog? Because they will have a choice of stud dogs. It is a business for a lot of owners of male dogs. And if it's just based on the looks, then fine, but be aware.
Yeah, sure.
We're still passing genes on, even though it's not going to have the same impact as the mum being around all the time, it is still going to... So it's quite a lot to take in, isn't there? When you go to the breeders to see the puppy, you do, like you're saying, maybe I take my dad, because he'd be like, no, 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 to every puppy. So I'd have to put him a really good argument as to why this puppy. So taking someone who's a bit more objective is, because it is really hard. I've walked away from litters of puppies before because they weren't quite right for one reason or another. And it is really hard. And it does make you think like, oh, maybe, but I am a firm believer in the right puppy will be found. You just have to wait sometimes. It will kind of happen.
And I think a lot of people do, I think certainly for us and the clients that we have who are amazing, but they can get a little bit lost in, they feel lonely or the house feels lonely without a dog in it.
Yeah.
They are more inclined to be in a rush to pick up a puppy to fill the void. And I think that can set you in danger zone for picking up puppy that isn't right for you, and or if their dog recently has passed away, their older dog, they're trying to fill that void and that space, and to try your bestest not to do that.
It is really hard, but it is really important that you spend the time now, because this is going to be a 10 plus year commitment for the majority of dogs, and so you have to make sure that the time you spend now and the when you're saying no, that's not the right puppy, that's going to really set you up for the next 10 years. If it takes you 6 months to find the right puppy, well then that's 6 months really well spent to make sure that you do.
And if you're right, a waiting list,
yes,
a great sign,
generally a good
definitely.
And, you know, wait for that puppy, because if they come in from a breeder that's, you know, doing lovely partial training beforehand in terms of like Day if they can start that, but if they're just coming from a really solid home with really solid foundations, then yeah, absolutely. What, 6 months?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And another thing to look for as well is things like the microchips. So we've not mentioned that. And are they, you know, are they planning to do pre-vaccinations? Are they doing, you know, what's their next steps in, you know, if you're seeing them at 5 or 6 weeks, what is to be expected over the next few weeks? What are they doing? What are their plans for their puppies in terms of their vets, in terms of their microchipping, in terms of their investigation work, in terms of what they're exposing them to as well?
Definitely. The other thing I would want to know as well is what make of vaccine are the puppies having, because there's different makes and they are slightly different in the way in which the schedule of vaccination happens, and the number of puppies that are on one type and then when they go to their own breeder, sorry, their own vet, they're on a different and they have to start again from scratch. So even if the vets you want to go to is different, some they can order it in, they don't have to choose, they don't have to vaccinate with that one. So that's something that is definitely worth being aware of. But it might be that you go to a different vet just for the puppy vaccinations and then move them to your preferred vet, because some puppies I've seen, they've not been going out on walks until they're 16, 17, 18 weeks of age because the vaccination schedules haven't matched up. That's a real problem. So being aware of the make and the process that they need to go through so that you can pick that up and run with it, so you can get them out of the house as early as you possibly can.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I mean, I think we're gonna talk a little bit more about what happens when you pick them up and time
I think that's our next episode, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. So we'll be talking a lot more about that, because I think there's a lot of crossed information about when you can't take your puppy out.
Definitely. But that we, as trainers, we want to get those puppies outside as early as possible. So anything you can do to safely get that happening, we need to be on top of it from as soon as possible.
Sure.
Okay. Shall we do a little bit more of a, because we've mentioned puppy farms a lot. Shall we kind of do a little bit more of like what we would be looking for to avoid them, and then what if we think we've identified somebody who is not breeding appropriately, what we would then do to A, walk away from the puppy, which is the hardest thing in the world to do, but then what would we do, what can you do once you've kind of identified that?
Okay.
So some of this we will have already touched on, but I think it's important just to have it in one place so people have a little bit of a checklist as to like, what do I need to look for? What are these red flags that are? Because they're clever.
They are very, clever. Very they're clever. Getting smarter.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the ones that I've come across that's quite common is cash payments. So a lot of the time they don't want to leave a trace of where they've come from or what they're doing or who's bought what. So cash payments for me is a really big red flag, because you can't then act on that, or what are the words that I'm looking for?
You've got no consumer rights or anything, have you, around?
Yeah, that's the thing. You're not insured for anything if anything were to happen, and you can't then trace an address or a place that comes from if you do decide to contact somebody about it being a bit of a dodgy place. So cash payments, big no. Make sure that your money is traceable.
Yeah, and if they're pressurizing you to get multiple dogs, doesn't necessarily mean it's a puppy farm. It does mean that they are struggling to home the dogs. So. Yeah.
Any pressure in terms of, oh well, there's someone else coming, so if you're not having this dog, then they'll have it. Any pressures like that, red flag.
Also then wanting you to take the puppy home immediately.
Yeah. And you're too young. Sometimes at like 6 weeks old or something.
Yes. Yes. So we haven't mentioned, but puppies should be 8 weeks at the youngest when they're rehomed to you. So anything younger than that is a huge red flag. We would walk far, far away.
Yeah, I think a few people that we've had through who have said that the owners who are not necessarily proper breeders were sending puppies home at 6 weeks because mum wasn't taking to the puppies, or, you know, there's a lot of things that you'll hear. But ultimately, if you want a green flag, you look for a puppy going home 8 to 10 weeks at that age.
Because why is mum not taking to the puppies? Like, you know, she's been all right so far, but suddenly taken against them. Why is that?
Asking questions.
Paperwork. There should be paperwork. You should be signing some kind of contract.
Absolutely.
for this puppy. They should be microchipped. They should have had veterinary checks. They should have probably had some vaccinations at some point in the last few weeks before you pick them up. So what are you getting? What paperwork are you getting? And within that paperwork, it should say what to do if you can no longer have the dog for whatever reason. And ideally, in an ideal world, it is to go back to the breeder, or that the breeder will help you to rehome the dog in some way.
Totally. And also I think, like, as a bonus green flag is that you get some kind of puppy information pack about breed, about, you know, what to do when you get home, some sort of aftercare or support. I feel like most really good breeders will offer you that, even if you feel like you don't need it, it's there, or there's a contact number, or there's, you know, someone that you can contact if you're struggling with something or you've got a question.
Yeah. Smell like mum generally come in those puppy packs. Normally you'll get some food, we'll come on to that. But so yeah, appropriate chews. What are what dog support? We have one that was just like, here's foods that are poisonous for your puppy, because some people don't know. But just handy information, leaflets, and, you know, a few bits and bobs to go, teddy bear, whatever they chips. That's cute.
So just on that, because I do love a green flag, but I do like to counter it with a red. Is in these puppy packs that I have seen, because I'm a really nosy dog trainer. If you've got some information, I want to see it. So if your puppy comes with a puppy pack, I want to read it. I would say that breeders' knowledge of correct training methods is still a little bit in the dark ages. They'll still use dominance, alpha, pack, leadership terms. They will still talk about punishing puppies for toileting in the wrong spaces. They will still talk about what to do, like how holding a puppy's mouth closed if they're biting. So yes, take on board the puppy pack, but just check that the training information is kind, fair, and effective.
I think that's a solid
Absolutely.
point.
I think the fact, in my head, it's the fact that they are willing, even if it's about care and grooming and those sorts of things, that there is a pack made for you is the extra green flag. And I totally agree with you that especially the breeders that have been around a longer time are still stuck. Then I mean, they're breeders,
They're not trainers.
actually, if they had could spend some time self-bettering or learning, and there are positive reinforcement based things in there, massive, massive green flags, amazing.
Massive, massive.
Or even contact numbers for trainers
Yes,
locally. I
or
think that's the puppy classes.
yeah, or associations like the APDT, like reach out to them, or like find these people. I would just say, in my personal experience, and maybe I have just been unlucky, the training section, I take the red pen to.
Yeah, just rip it off.
Just put it back. Like, just comment for you there if you want to have a look at
And
that.
it is, it's like vets in the nicest possible way. They don't have the depth of knowledge that trainers and behaviorists should have as a professional, and that's fine, but we just don't necessarily listen to what they're saying
Yeah,
about
definitely.
it. There are breeders out there who are brilliant, and this is trying to make people aware of stuff rather than kind of stereotyping all breeders. I'm sure that there are maybe breeders listening and who are whinging at us. This is not to say, like, there are amazing breeders out there, and what we're trying to do is make sure that you find them. But just kind of pointing out where we've seen things through our years and years of experience that are maybe could be better.
Yeah, I feel like my feelings about this have got slightly better in recent years because we have such a big puppy school. We've had some local breeders that will send their puppies to us and they'll recommend, but actually the way
Perfect.
they train is great, and they've been to us for training with their dogs, and they're starting to understand how to do that with their puppies. And I've even had one of ours who invited me when the puppies were teeny tiny and asked how he could make that experience better, and I was like, thank
And
you.
as trainers, like, that's like I always say, more from a behaviorist point, like, of my business, I'd love to never have to do another behavior case in my life, because we are breeding well-adjusted, well-rounded puppies who have had appropriate training, who can then cope with the human world that we put them into, and from a behavioral point of view, are sound. And if my knowledge can help get us to that point and my behaviorist business has to close because there are no problems, then brilliant, I feel like that's like that's work done. It's never going to happen, I can't ever see it, but that, like, that's what we really aim for. We don't want dogs with problems in the world. So yes, I just wanted to be like, I was like, I'm being a little bit negative, but it's more because I just want people to be aware of the things that they, you know, rather than we think all breeders are like this, because I know that there are some great breeders out there.
But on that note, if there are any breeders listening to this podcast and you would like to just get in touch with us and ask us questions and say, okay, well, what should we include?
Then
just
yeah.
You know, yeah. Be open to...
How can I better prepare with training? Yeah,
yeah, definitely. 100%.
So back to red flags.
we moved away from them for like 3 seconds, so straight back.
But the house, what's in, how clean is the house, is it a show home, is everything like just perfect? Let's face it, if you're looking after 8 puppies, your house isn't going to be perfect. No. You're going to be like, ugh.
yeah
so yeah, just be aware of it. There could be one or two out there where people have the ability to be superpowers. But
I'm sure.
But on the whole, just to keep it in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and these houses should have at least the mum living in them full time. So are there dog bowls around on the floor for mum to be, you know, like, we always have a water bowl down for our dogs, and more often than not, an empty food bowl from where Stanley's eaten his breakfast and then we've not picked it back up. Is there a box
like
of...
a blanket on the sofa that's got hairs
on
it?
Yeah, exactly. Or is there a box of toys and chews around?
Pictures.
Yeah. It's, you know, it does it look like a dog lives in that house 24/7?
I would also think that maybe this is not all dog breeders, but generally they're quite proud of their breed and the lineage. Yeah. So I think a lot of them would probably have photos of their dogs because they're proud of them.
Yeah.
Out, or their family dogs that have been out with them on holidays. Like, exactly. They're all really good. Again, that kind of thing is not a hard no, but it's,
no.
It helps. All these things help.
Yeah. Are there some dirty, muddy wellies knocking around? You know, like, are these dogs going for a walk? It is just being really critical instead of going, oh, the house is lovely and clean and tidy and it was like really nice. Does it look like, I always know when I'm at work, when I've turned up to the right house, because there'll be stuff on the porch, you know, wellies or a dog lead or a manky tennis ball that's been chewed.
Yeah. That's
like those kind. Yeah. And you go, oh yeah, no, I'm at the right house, because
piled up near the door because you bring them back in.
Yeah, exactly. So there are ways to tell if a dog lives in a house or has just been brought into a house.
Yeah.
So okay, so we've ticked all of the red flags and we think actually this looks suspiciously looks suspicious. Or you've got a piece of information like the mum's had 2 litters that year and has done for the last 5 years, that kind of information. The most important thing is to walk away. And that is also the hardest thing to do. But you're going to take that puppy and then you're going to have 10 years of trying to fix that puppy and help it live in your world. And it's going to, a lot of the time, it's going to really struggle. And we saw this a lot coming out of lockdown, where puppy breeders or puppy farm inappropriate breeders went to town on the fact that people couldn't visit the pups at home. They could, that's the other thing, they could drop them off, they could pass them across in a car park, they could do all of these things. And although some breeders still managed to, you know, get their puppies and it was all fine, poorly bred dogs kind of, and the demand for puppies went through the roof as well. You know, there's a lot of dogs out there who really struggle now with life on the other side of lockdown. So be aware, but also we need to report them. We need to start to get things in place to shut them down if possible. Yeah. So
I guess that, first of all, that's not even necessarily backyard breeders or puppy mills. If you go to one that is registered with an association, first thing you do is you call the association.
Yeah.
And you them, because it's not always the case that they're the perfect breeding facility. You know, that's if they have an association with them, first thing you do is you go to the association and you report them.
So if they're kennel club registered breeder,
yeah, exactly.
Or Or I think if they, I think sometimes as well, if they're a breed, specific breeder, they can have their own kind of breed clubs that they can be members of as well. So I would also go to them as well. I'd also go to the council.
Local council, absolutely. Yeah.
And potentially even the police in some instances, depending on what information you've got. The police aren't going to be interested if you've just gone to a nice show home and there's been some puppies there and you've got some red flags.
Yeah,
Probably not going to be that bothered, but the
they have
council
to
might
be
be.
licensed generally under the council.
Yeah.
A licensed breeder is what you're looking for. So they're
Yeah.
licensed under the local council. So that's who you contact if you are worried about the setup. Yeah.
The thing with the license from the council is it's quite specific. So if your dog accidentally breeds on a walk with Fido, you don't have to have a license to sell those puppies. But if you're going to do it as more of a endeavor, then you do need to be. But I would always check out the council would be my first port of call. Their licensing department, or environmental health, that kind of, I would straight away, dog warden, straight away be having a chat about what I'd seen, and then what could be done about it.
Yeah, and if you see puppies that are just in absolute squalor and you can see that it's
The
just a really
welfare.
miserable life, then of course, obviously, you've got your associations like the RSPCA that you can call
Yeah.
it as well.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's not.
Hopefully you won't be in that situation,
That's
but
it. And it's the, again, those, and that's the other side I spoke about earlier, is if you did pick a puppy up from one of those bases and that petition's already been made, to still follow through with calling
yeah.
those associations, not just being worried that they're gonna come back to you or, April's
Yeah,
gonna come back. No
definitely.
one's going to judge you at that point. That point,
No.
you need to put yourself into a situation where you're helping further puppies not be put into that situation.
Yes,
So.
100%. Because we've all looked at puppies, I'm sure, and gone, I need to take this puppy. Like, this puppy needs removing, and it is so hard to be able to walk away from it. So I never think to people, oh, you should have just left them. Like, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Let's work. Like, thank you for sharing that. That's really important for me to know. It helps me to plan an effective course for you to work through so that we can make this puppy really well adjusted in society.
Yeah, cool.
So we've found all our green flags, we've identified a litter. Now, which puppy are we taking home from that litter? Let's say we have pick of the litter.
It's the best day ever picking a
The
puppy.
best day ever picking.
It really is. It's such a, like, I can just remember how excited I was to go and meet Walt for the first time. It was just like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
We did it the bad way. Don't do what we did. If you pick from a photograph, don't do that. We were just really looking. Try and pick your puppy when you meet them, please.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I'm sure some people listening to this have maybe got a dog throughout lockdown and the rules were very different, or, and situations arise, or the puppies are too far away and it's not necessarily, you maybe went to see them when they were 4 weeks old. It's not a great time to be picking your puppy. So maybe later there was some photos or videos and you picked from that. So there's always caveats around this, isn't there?
Yeah.
That it's
So,
not going to be perfect, but
the
let's go with
thing,
the perfect world.
I quite like what we said about puppy picking Tinder. That's quite cute. But based
Yeah.
on not just looks, I think good quality breeders out there will try to match the puppies they have to the families, and that's the individuals to the family.
Yeah.
So if they vet you and get a good idea of what you're looking for and what your family setup is like, what kind of puppy would fit into your family, they should have a good handle when those puppies are growing up of the personalities of those puppies, and they generally will try to match you to one of those. So if
Yeah.
they say, well, this puppy is quite quiet, this one's more like lively and bouncy, so maybe come and think about those ones when you come here.
Yes.
That's quite a good sign for me when you're going in to for you to then be matched with that puppy a little bit as well.
Totally. I think having lots of videos before, because when you go, if you go a couple of times and you maybe spend an hour there each time, you're only having 2 hours to go off, which is not a huge amount of time. And the puppies might act differently when you're there. Maybe you go and they're all asleep, or they're all mental because they've just eaten, or there's going to be highs and lows within the day, isn't there, that's going to impact their behavior at that time. So having lots of videos from the breeder just throughout their days and whatever, it's going to really help you to see what those puppies are like more generally. rather than just when you're there.
I think in terms of when you really look at what it is that you want, if you want a puppy that's particularly sociable, which I think is on most people's wish lists, to be fair, then if you go in and, you know, there's one puppy cowering in the corner and the rest of them can say hi, then I think, you know, read into that. Think to yourself, hey, well, maybe that puppy is actually better suited to a quieter home, and you've just gone in with a family of five and it's all a bit loud and overwhelming. Then maybe that puppy isn't the right one for you. Maybe out of that bunch, the ones that are coming over and quite happy to be like, hey, how are you doing? Then they're more going to be more appropriate for you.
And equally, if you've got a 90-year-old grandparent that comes to your house 3 days a week, and you've got the Labrador puppy that flies at you and jumps on you and mouths you, that probably isn't going to be an appropriate environment for that puppy. So
no, it's about, so I always say to people, go in and sit down in the pen or in the area, and then see what, you know, instead of going to the puppies, see what the puppies do. Can they come over? Are they quite calm, but are they inquisitive and confident? That's what I look for. I want a dog that's interested in what's going on around it and is confident to explore things and people in that environment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just try to have a little play, not too hands-on. Like, are there toys there? Will the puppy engage and play with you? How keen are they to interact with you as a human that's new in their environment? Yeah.
You don't want any extremes, do you? You don't want an extreme puppy on either end of the scale. You want one that's just in the middle. It's almost overlooked in some ways because they're not really this or that. They're
the middle child.
They're just getting on with life and they're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me as well, like if it was me going to pick a puppy, I'm quite independent and I like a self-soother. I am a self-soother.
Yeah.
So actually for me going in, it would be a puppy that comes and trots and says hello, is quite confident to explore, but then picks up a ball or stick and then sits and chews it near you.
Yes.
And is happy to settle. Yes. That for me is like perfect. That suits my family and my life.
Exactly. That is it. It's kind of almost finding the mirror of you, isn't it?
Yeah.
In some ways. So, but there's no right or wrong on this. If you want the crazy Cocker Spaniel puppy that's all up in your face and that is what you're looking for, that is absolutely fine to pick that puppy.
There's a puppy for everybody.
There is a puppy for everyone. It's just trying to kind of think about it, you know, in 6 months' time, in a year's time, am I still going to enjoy that level of in my face? Yes, brilliant. Then that is the puppy for you. If you're like, no, actually, I'd quite like to just be able to sit and watch telly, maybe that isn't the puppy for you.
Yeah,
I think like see it as a mirror to the future. When you're
it's very, very philosophical, Anna.
It's very philosophical.
I just came with that on my own. So. It's very true, isn't it? You know, just expect what you see in front of you is generally what you'll get later down the line. So, you know, just...
And that's like, but equally as well, I suppose, that is their personality in that context where they are. And also at the age that they're at. And there's no reason why you can't then aid that puppy in training and learning to be more confident around things.
Yes.
If you have a puppy that is slightly more nervous or is the one that's like cowering in the corner, there's a lot of stuff you can do in the early stages to support that.
Yes, and absolutely.
And equally the one that's crazy, you can do
you can stuff bring it down.
Yeah, so you can help that. I mean, it helps in the start for you to reduce how much work you have to do, but actually if you're wanting to do lots of training and work, fine, you'll be fine whatever puppy you pick up.
That's it.
Jack's there, when we saw him, she was like, he's a bit of a whinge bag.
She's not wrong.
She's not. And even now he is five soon. And he is still a noisy little whinge.
Oh, really?
Fine. Because, you know, that's exactly as she sold him.
Yeah. There was no trading standards are all fine there.
It was a mirror for the future, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
A mirror for the future. Okay, so we've got our breeder, we've got our puppy. I think the last thing that you need to get prepped for before the puppy comes home is a little bit of a shopping list of things that you will and maybe won't need. Now, I think going into a pet shop can be a slightly overwhelming experience. And because I like to spend money in pet shops, I am the kind of person that will buy anything and everything. I'm very much like, oh, I can shop for this. I'm all in. I started running. I buy all of the gear. I have all of the gear. I have all of the
and the
gear.
top, like the top level gear. I'm an,
oh yeah,
do the top level gear. That's like
there is another level of gear.
Yeah.
people are like, you can buy a hydration vest from Amazon for like 10 quid. I'm like, no, mine was £110 and I wear it 4 times a year.
Yeah. But it filters my water.
But it's good quality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gold standard water for that as well.
100%. I live in Harrogate. We only have gold standard water here. You can find it all around the world.
There's a brand named after us, actually.
I know what I'm like. I'm very much like, go in a shop, buy everything.
Yeah.
And also, when you're getting a puppy, it's so exciting. Like, it's easy to just be like,
yeah, and a lot of people want it matching.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's got to go with the living room. It's got to, you know. I think it's so easy to get bogged down with the amount of stuff you have to buy. But maybe we go buy bare basics first. Maybe we talk about those.
I think because I'm going to justify myself with this. There is absolutely nothing wrong with going into the pet shop and buying anything and everything.
Totally agree.
I'm there for it, and I will support you. I'm that person. If you go shopping, I'm like, get it. I'm quite happy with that. But I also think that there are things that you need, and then there are things that you want. And the things that you want, you can go crazy on. But there are certain things that you need, and that will help you settle that puppy in.
Sure.
The first one is, where are they going to sleep?
Which a puppy needs a lot of. So they're going to spend a lot of time in there. Let's put some effort into finding something that is appropriate for them.
My top tip for this is a very cheap single duvet and a very cheap single duvet cover. I think my last one was from like Asda Smart Price. I got that and a very cheap duvet cover. And then it's easy to keep clean and it's really comfy and it can be big or it can be small and it can be on a sofa. It's just very easy to use and it doesn't seem to be very chewable, because a lot of puppy beds will just be destroyed immediately. So that's my top tip on that, and it has always worked for me.
I think it's a really good idea, because again, it's easy to wash as well. You're going to probably be doing a lot of washing of when you first get your puppy. I think some people buy beds that are filled with lots of stuffing, and I think in your first, if you're planning to keep that for the first 5-6 months, it's probably not going to have stuffing in it for a little while. And also that can be quite detrimental to your puppy if they do ingest it.
Yeah, cheap and cheerful is fine, but safe is more important.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then just some vet bed as well. I think that's so handy, because you can use that as their little place, and you can move it around, take it to pubs, put it in the car. In the crate. So just getting yourself like a meter of vet bed that you can then, you know, put in all of those scenarios as well.
Yeah. And again, really easy to wash.
Wash.
Yeah. It's all about washing.
Yeah.
Well, they can chew it, but it doesn't really do much. It's quite good, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And then also a crate, if you're going to crate train, and the crate needs to be an appropriate size. So it might be that you need multiple crates as your puppy gets bigger, or some crates you can get with like a divider in, so you can make the crate smaller and then move the divider and they have more space within it. Personally, I prefer a pen over a crate. It's my personal choice. That is a luxury I have, because I have a large kitchen space, so I have a bit more space. Not everyone has that.
It's ultimately a puppy safe space.
Yeah.
So a puppy safe space where your puppy, if you need to leave them, and hopefully you will start leaving them quite early, which is something, again, we can talk about later in the part of the series. But it's a puppy safe place where you can leave them that is cozy and that they feel good about. So a lot of our clients choose, if they have the space, they'll choose the crate open with a puppy pen extra around the outside. So you can section off those two spaces, but also you've got an area that's an extension where your puppy can come out. And it generally does make things like your toilet training easier, and your nipping and biting reduces because your space is changing. And if you have kids and other animals, it's almost like mandatory. Actually, I think if there's far too much pressure on children and puppies to get it right in their relationship. And I feel like that is tarnished or ruined quite early if they're just kind of in the same space all the time. So
It just allows for management on top of everything else, doesn't it? It's good for training and it helps with your management. It can also be that you have a room, like a utility room, and that's your puppy's safe space. You fully puppy-proof it and you just have that instead with maybe a baby gate across. So it really depends on the setup of the house as to what's going to work best. But just like you say, some puppy management space is going to be really important.
Yeah, and like a lot of people nowadays have open plan houses. So I feel like that's a really good option for that.
Yeah.
Doing it. And also I guess just thinking about where you're putting it, so where you're putting that crate, like obviously not right next to a radiator, it's not near a window where it's going to be cold or where the sun's directly coming in,
and not somewhere that's high it's not somewhere that's high traffic either, so not somewhere that where the puppy's gone to sleep and then everyone's traipsing past all the time as well is
And maybe a topic for another day, but also it's not somewhere where your Wi-Fi router is or you've got humming electronics so that it's disturbing your puppy, because they'll sense that more than we do.
Yeah, definitely. You'll also need a water bowl, standard, and a food bowl, which doesn't have to be standard. It can be anything that holds food, essentially. Stanley eats out of a brand I don't recommend anymore, but a rubber bowl. That's his standard food bowl. It doesn't matter. I'm a big fan of interactive feeding, so generally my dogs don't eat out of just a static bowl on the floor, but it is useful to have one.
Absolutely.
Not a plastic one.
Yeah, let's just talk about slow feeders for a sec. Like,
if you've got
a fast feeder, go for interactive feeding. Slow feeder bowls can cause you issues in the future around frustration around food. It can also, the plastic nubs when they're trying to get their food can hurt their gums whilst feeding, which again can cause, you know, quite upsetting associations around food. You know, and then that can hinder you in the future when it comes to trying to use food as a reinforcer for them when you're trying to train with them. So if they are really fast eaters, use things like just put it in a cereal bowl or wrap it up in a towel or chuck it all over the floor or whatever it is you need to do. Bowls are fine. Ceramic is great. It's funny.
And also if you have a large breed, giant breed, or a deep chested breed, they're probably going to need their food bowl raising off the floor as well. So thinking about how you're going to manage that.
Yeah. And that is also something that I'd hope that the breeders would be
giving
information on. But unfortunately, slow bowls are something that I'm finding they are recommending a lot for puppies.
Especially
labs. And again, it's like we're finding we're getting some, and I don't want to put a direct link in there, but we're finding is that we're getting some resource guarding and stress around food bowls because we've got dogs that have really sensitive gums going in and like hitting their gums, and then people are approaching that space and then they're trying all of the putting the hands in the bowls, and it's just all a bit of a mess.
it is I think for puppies the most important thing is that they're eating. It doesn't matter so much if it's fast, as long as they are ingesting enough food to keep them healthy. We can introduce more interactive, more challenging feeding as we get to know our dog, but maybe not from day one.
For sure.
I think food.
God.
Oh, she says with a hand. I'm also looking at how long this podcast is going on for. Shall we pick up food in the next episode? Because this is a lot. We're going to get into, I know what we're like. We're going to get into this. And we're going to have, I know. Initially, you want to be feeding the same food that your breeder has been feeding your puppy. So if they should give you some, if not, or if you're prepared, buy the same food. We will talk about food in more depth. Buy a small pack. We'll talk about food in more depth when it's a more appropriate time. But otherwise, this is going to be a 3-hour podcast and people will have to. Initially, they no matter the food, she says, kind of, they probably just need to stay on it. And we'll deal with that in a few weeks' time of the puppy's life. I saw it on the list and I was like, oh.
Oh, no.
Just make sure they have food.
Oh,
keep them alive.
Just feed them. Feed them food. Keep them alive. They're going to need things to be able to chew on that are appropriate. And often when you haven't got the puppy, you're not going to know what that is. So just buy a couple of different types of chews that are designed for puppies to gnaw on. And then as you get to know your puppy, we can make those more specific to them.
I think like the two easiest ones, the easiest one for people to do that is not going to harm their puppy, they're not going to ingest, is if they've got rope to get a couple of rope toys.
Yeah.
soak them in water and put them in the freezer and get them out again, they can chew on those and it is just their rope toys. So
yeah,
giving them anything extra they're going to ingest, it's just something they've got that's going to help keep those gums nice and cool as well.
Absolutely. You're going to want to buy some toys. They're also going to get destroyed, so don't spend a lot of money on
them. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Charity shops.
Charity yeah. shops are a great place. And I always look for a little bit of a variety. So maybe some soft, cuddly toys, some rope toys, some kind of more harder fabric, like a Kong Wubba type toy as well, just so that you can learn what the puppy is going to enjoy. And then you can go down that kind of route. They're going to need a collar, and you're going to need to be putting that collar on pretty early in their life, so make sure it fits. Sometimes if they're really little, you'll need a cat collar just because they go a little bit smaller, and you will need a tag for your dog. And on your dog's tag, you must put your address by law. And that's the bit that everyone seems to miss out. They'll have their name and their phone number and a QR code and a cute little message. But legally, it has to have your address on it.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to not put their dog's name on there.
Yeah.
No, we don't want the dog. We don't want people knowing that it's called Fido.
Especially if it's lost. So I know it's adorable. I know it's cute. And I know I sound just like I'm constantly here, like, don't do this. It is a safeguarding thing at the end of the day. And if you want to keep your dog safe, then I suggest that you don't do that.
I just put my surname, my mobile number and my address on the tag, and it's very functional. And it's not pretty. It just has what it needs to have on it.
Yeah. Just quick release. So the easy on, easy off, you're not faffing around.
Yeah.
Stuff. If your puppy gets caught or stuck on anything, you can just really quickly pop it off.
Absolutely.
Stress as well.
Mm-hmm. And you'll need a lead, and we will probably go into more depth about harnesses and appropriate harnesses and inappropriate harnesses as we go forwards.
So if people are looking at harnesses, it's not having their name on their harness. I know it's cute. People write, again, we'll talk about Julius Kane and things like that, but the ones where they've got their sticky names on.
Yeah.
No, don't have your dog's name on anything on them.
No, especially if you want to put them on Instagram.
Yes. Oh, yes. And just remember, addresses are on those tags. So W photos on Instagram as well. Yeah, I message people so often. I'm like, I know where you live. Please cover that.
Yeah. I found you.
Knock on the door. Hi.
In our next episode, we're going to talk about bringing the puppy home. So we will talk about how to bring the puppy home in the car in that episode. But you do need to think long term about the type of car you've got and then what that means for where they're going to travel. And do you need to get a crate, or are you going to put them in a crate in the boot, or are they going to be in a bed that kind with a harness? So you also need to think about what your car looks like. I have a Mini, so it's a consideration for me more than most, but where my dogs are actually going to fit in the car. So thinking about things like that. You're going to need loads of good quality soft-ish treats as well.
Soft being a key thing there as well. Teething. So generally puppy specific ones are a little bit softer because of that. So and the more neutral you can go, the better with most of your food options. So
but I would probably look at buying a couple of bags so I had them in. But again, this is going to be something you learn about with your dog. So what do they like? What do they not like? What are they partial to? What will they work hard for? It's all going to be part of that fab journey you're going to have with them, where you learn loads about them and their likes and dislikes.
Yes, we're gonna put a little like bib on them and then put some plates out and they can try little bits
of I love a little plating platter, a little smorgasbord. Oh
yeah, we can give ratings on what they like most.
I love
it. Bags.
Yeah.
Two bags,
biodegradable.
Yeah.
Keep the planet a little bit happier. They now, so it's not too bad.
And then if your dog's gonna need a lot of grooming, so you're going to need to start early. And my favorite thing is those really soft baby brushes, so they get used to the sensation. And then speak to a groomer. I would say this, my grooming knowledge is probably my weakest element of my training, just because it's not something I have much of an interest in. So you will need to find a groomer early. Ask them which brush they want you to use.
that's and check in with them that they also are going to use kind methods with your dog.
Everyone who you encounter with your dog, whether it's a groomer, a dog walker, a boarding facility, a kennels, a trainer, nearly missed us off the list there. Who's the other one? We want to be making sure that we're all using positive reinforcement based training techniques.
And what that means is that you use rewards for your dog for doing behaviors that you like to see, and you don't use punishment to try and stop it.
Yes. It's a complex area because we're not fully positive reinforcement based, because we will use other techniques, but it's so complicated that maybe that is something for another day.
Yeah, it's a big hole, isn't it?
But with puppies, it is really nearly always positive reinforcement. You're just looking for something that they're doing that you like, and you feed them a treat for it, and they'll do it again in the future. So,
or fuss, or play, or anything.
Yeah. I think that's it for the shopping list. It's everything that we had on our list that we came up with. So
yeah, I love that. So, and now people have got their puppies and they've got their shopping and they're ready to bring them home. How exciting.
And in our next episode, we're going to talk about bringing them home, that kind of first 24, 48 hours with our puppies, what we need to be focusing on, what we need to not worry about, how we can set things up so that those first couple of days are setting them up for the rest of their life. No pressure.
No pressure.
It's a whirlwind, those first 48 hours. So I think maybe hopefully this will be a helpful guide for you to just be like, no, this is okay, this is normal, and this is how I can help my puppy and yourself.
That's it. Perfect. Well, I think that's a lot of information. So we'll let people digest that, and we'll be back in a fortnight with bringing that puppy home.
Thank you.
Hopefully in that bumper episode, we have told you everything you need to know about picking a happy puppy for you and your family. In our next episode, we're going to talk about bringing that puppy home and how to get the best out of your first 24 and 48 hours. We've got loads of episodes coming up to get a really happy puppy. But if you have a specific question, drop it to me at pooches.galore and I will add them all to a list. And at the end of the series, anything that we feel like we haven't covered, we will include in a questions and answers episode.